Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Lead Simple and 4.5. They have teamed up to come up with one of the best conferences for anyone in or around the property management industry to attend. It's called the PM Grow Summit. This conference is laser focused on growth strategies and thought leaders from around the country. Now, I personally attended their PM Grow Summit last year and was truly impressed with the format, the venue, the quality speakers, and the level of attendance. And that was just their first year putting it on. This year's PM Grow Summit will be held in San Diego in early 2018, and it's shaping up to look like another fantastic event you will not want to miss. I've already booked my spot for the conference, and I would encourage listeners to do the same. You can learn more by going to pmgrowsummit.com. As an additional incentive, you can enter in the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D, to get a $100 discount when booking your ticket. If you ever need an excuse to go to San Diego and stay at one of the historic downtown hotels, this is your chance. Do not miss this event. Again, go to pmgrowsummit.com and enter in the promo code BRAD for a $100 discount on admission. Hi, everyone. In today's episode, we're going to have Angela Gonzalez and Aaron Landis in from Rent Moxie Property Management out of Fort Worth near the Dallas, Texas area. Now, these two ladies have basically started their own management company, and they're somewhat in their infancy, only a couple years old. A lot of good techniques they're employing. They're doing different things a little bit out of the box with some consulting efforts here, and they're also working for other companies and helping them manage their properties. I thought they were just doing some really neat, out-of-the-box thinking things, so it's definitely a worthwhile listen. In addition, I'd also recommend everyone check out the PM Grow Summit. That's going to happen in early February of 2018, a very, very worthwhile conference. So I encourage everybody to check it out. You can visit them at pmgrowsummit.com. And should you decide to buy up and sign up for a ticket, go ahead and use the promo code BRAD for a $100 discount. All right, let's get into it. And welcome to another episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show. Thanks for joining us. In today's episode, I have Moxie Property Management from Fort Worth. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Aaron Landis, Moxie Property Management, Arlington and Fort Worth.
Cool.
And I'm Angela Gonzalez, lead property manager, and we're both co-owners of the company.
Thanks for coming down, you guys. I appreciate you making the trip. And we're just going to have a conversation, talk about good stuff in the property management world. I really want to kind of dive into your company and how you started, how you've been getting going, because the age of your company is not that old, and you guys have grown to a decent amount and pretty quick. So let's kind of touch on that.
We've grown in dog years.
Dog years, okay. How's that work?
It's accelerated.
Yeah. So the story of Moxie, the short version of it, Aaron and I met in like 2009. Uh-huh. I started working at a pretty large property management firm based in Fort Worth. Aaron had been working there for many, many, many years in the back office. And so I started there really as an assistant to a property manager. I was not licensed, and it was something that I fell back on. I just graduated grad school and hated the direction that I was supposed to go after that. So was looking for something else, had some property management experience prior, and landed basically an assistant's job at this company. And so there came a point pretty quickly, I'd say probably like 2 weeks after I started, where the property manager that I was working for, I just started looking at all these kind of older tasks that needed to be cleaned up. And there were a lot of questions that I had, and nobody in the office had the answers. Mm-hmm. And when I say nobody had the answers, like nobody had the answers. So there was literally a day where I was just walking around the office with a stack of folders, because it was all paper files back then. Mm-hmm. And I was just asking everybody, who knows the answers to these questions? Like, who in this office legitimately knows property management and can answer these questions? And they just kept pointing me further and further down the hall until I landed at Aaron's door. And she was like, behind all these computer screens and like peeks up over the screens. And she's like, what do you want? And I was like, I've got questions about this and this and this. And she looked at me and she goes, who are you? And I was like, I'm the assistant for so-and-so property manager. She was like, get in and shut the door. And it was literally like that. So I got in and shut the door, and she was like, nobody asks questions like that. She was like, sit down. And I'm like, okay. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, and I had already like sought out the person she was working for, and because I said, she's not she's not like these people. Mm-hmm. What's her story? Why is she here? Because she wasn't like the people we were surrounded by. So
this brings up a very interesting topic. So you guys were both working at another property uh-huh. management firm. Mm-hmm. And at some point you looked at each other and said, let's go. We need to get out of here and start our own deal.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
I left in 2011 when my daughter was born.
Okay.
Thought I was basically retiring then. And then within the year, I kept consulting I actually have done a lot of consulting for Daryl Kazin.
Okay.
And so I started doing some big projects for him as soon as I left. And then someone else who wanted to start a management company approached me about basically not retiring and doing a startup with him. And that's where she left and joined us.
So, okay. the three of us had a little startup. And so while she was raising kids, the company that we were working for was changing from portfolio basically to employee-based. And when I saw that writing on the wall, I was mm-hmm. like, I'm out of here. So I had contacted her and said, hey, things are changing here pretty quickly. And she said, well, I've got this guy who wants to start a PM company. So we sat down and talked. We did launch a startup with that third person. And basically at the end of 2 years, we learned a very valuable lesson, which is that two's company and three's a crowd. Mm-hmm. And also just sometimes people are terrible business people. So Aaron and I looked at each other really within a matter of days and just said, why did we ever think we needed somebody else? You know, and that was a really nice moment of reckoning. And so I looked at her and she looked at me and we're like, we can do this. Yeah. Let's run the company that we've always wanted to run.
Within 8 days, mm-hmm. we had another one started.
Yeah.
What were some of the challenges that you came upon when doing that? I mean, is it an inner challenge more than anything else? Saying, okay, we're going to step out and do it ourselves.
That wasn't really intimidating because we already were. We were doing everything. It was just, okay, what do we need to do to start a company? What are we forgetting?
It's mm-hmm. kind of like the business 101 stuff. Yeah. It was, what do we need in place to be a legitimate company? What do we need to protect ourselves from liability issues? And that was outside of the property management side of it. It was just, as business owners, mm-hmm. what do we need in place? What about our banker? What banker are we going to use? Is that somebody who's going to have our back? Oh, we need a CPA. Oh, we probably need a financial planner.
We need an attorney.
Yeah, just putting those pieces in together and having them from the get-go, which I think probably helped us out tremendously as we went along.
So, as a tangent, let's kind of put ourselves in the time machine and go back to that startup mm-hmm. time frame. What would you do differently? Give me one lesson learned that you'd love to share with the audience to say, man, if I had done it 2 years ago like this, we'd have been better off. Just anything off the top of your head. And if you want to think about it and come back to it later, yeah. you know, we can hit it on because, you know, one of the things I want to talk about too, and we'll go back to that time machine tangent. Don't mm-hmm. let me forget. As you mentioned, the AppFolio consulting, mm-hmm. Because you were actually consulting the AppFolio people, the software people. You were consulting them practically.
Yeah, I'm doing a thing for them next week.
That's impressive. So it's kind of like the shoes on the other foot, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, you would think they'd be coaching you, but you're coaching them.
And I actually, since I've been using it since 2009, I just know a lot. And I've been through a lot of changes and I've figured out workarounds. And so I've consulted for a whole lot of other users all over the country.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
That's very neat. So that gave you the solid base of accounting mm-hmm. and partnerships, not partnerships, that's the wrong word, but solid base of actually understanding the yeah. software to where that's one of your key elements mm-hmm. in setting up a company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really neat because if you can't manage the systems, you can't manage the books, I mean, it's going to be really
daunting. And that's what I've noticed this throughout the country is people go into it with the property management experience, but don't have a clue about the rest of it. And it's very easy to screw it up. And then you've got errors on top of errors. And
makes it tough to grow when you're turning backwards, constantly trying to reorganize.
And especially on the accounting side of it. And I think, honestly, you know, I obviously bring value to the company on a day-to-day basis in some small ways. But there is an inherent, I mean, it's not an everyday fear. I'm not like trembling in the corner, but there is this thought that, and I think it's for both of us in some ways, but especially for me, if something were to happen to Erin, or even if she just looked at me one day and said, you know what, I've made my money. I'm headed to Tahiti for the rest of my life to have a fish taco stand. I don't want to lose her. Like if something happened to her and I didn't have her as the financial backbone to the company, it would be very, very difficult. And I do see the struggles and hear it even at NARPM events, you know, if you don't have the accounting side of this business down pat, mm-hmm. you might as well stick a fork in you, because yeah. it's coming.
I want to bring up a total side mm-hmm. event here. Let's talk about this. We saw something on a listserv the other day called mm-hmm. Full Month Accounting. Mm-hmm. And the NARPM listserv is tremendous, by the way.
Yes.
You know, I do yeah. get a lot out of that. I think everyone that pays attention to it uh-huh. gets something out of mm-hmm. it. You have your folks that constantly contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have the time for that, but it is where I go when I need a question answered and I want to see if what other people say.
Yeah, about it. Yeah. So a gentleman and dropped I can't remember who it was. I think it was Steve Welty, who may have dropped the term full month accounting on there. And so I'm blindsiding you with this, mm-hmm. so bear with me. I'm going to try and explain it and let's kick it around, because we're really debating on doing this. And so the concept is we would collect rent to, you know, this month, today's 14 July. Mm-hmm. So we're collecting rent through the first week of July mm-hmm. and then we're paying our owners on 1 August. On the dot, you're paying your owners yeah. 1 August. So it's almost like you're pushing it ahead. Mm-hmm. Now the owners at the beginning, they're going to be a month behind.
Right.
Okay, that's the challenge. We can have owners screaming, they can't mm-hmm. make their mortgage, they need money for here, for mm-hmm. there, for there, the other. So this is it's a coaching thing to where you can get your owners up front to say, I understand what you're doing. So you're taking the money from July and paying me on 1 August. Mm-hmm. And if the owners are 1 month ahead, they're getting paid the first every month by clockwork, right?
Right.
This gives you money to pay vendors mm-hmm. as soon as because you're going to have money in the account
yeah.
on behalf of the owner. I mean, there's a reserve, you know, mm-hmm. everyone's got that kind of concept, but then you may have $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 of owner's money kind of held there for 2, 3, 4 weeks in your account. You can pay vendors immediately.
Yeah.
And then on the first, they get paid mm-hmm. like clockwork. So that's something to consider. What do you guys think of that?
Well, that's kind of how we did at the company we started at. They had always paid on the 25th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
they were stretching it.
You know, we had paid vendors twice throughout the month. And there was just, you know, 5, 6 days of the month left before mm-hmm. we started getting rents, you know.
Because typically what we're doing is this is a lot of management companies. Mm-hmm. This is very, very common. Rent is due the first. It's late the third.
Right.
You know, usually collected in by the third, fourth, fifth. Mm-hmm. And then we're sending out owners yeah. money, 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Right.
So typically by the 12th, uh-huh. mm-hmm. that first couple weeks of the month, owners have their money. Mm-hmm. And they're used to that. That's what kind of everybody is doing in this market. But this mindset of doing full month accounting really is kind of appealing mm-hmm. because one of our challenges is paying vendors right away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We try to put vendors on net 30,
yep.
right? You tell them up front, hey, you're net 30, you're net 30. But
yeah.
I really would like to yeah. pay vendors as soon as they're done.
We give them a pay schedule and say, invoices submitted before this date will be paid on this date.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate for them because they yeah. do have to wait 30 days sometimes, and they have guys to pay and they're running small businesses. So, you know, this is something I would not say, you know, I'm normally a really fast implementer. I'll see something and just, you know, right. jump in with both feet, but that's kind of a scary deal.
That's something to think. Yeah. And I think, I mean, you're still, even though it's full month accounting, and I'm sure there's some advantages to it from an accounting side in that month's activities are essentially closed out. I mean, your July activity is closed out in July. So by the time you hit August 1, there really shouldn't be anything that happened in July that hasn't been taken care of. So I can see that, but it still doesn't eliminate the fact that you're going to have a schedule. You're going to have a schedule to pay your vendors. There's still things. So it almost just seems to me like, you know, you're giving the company a little bit of extra time mm-hmm. to get it done. So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely, it's interesting.
Yeah. It may not benefit the owner necessarily.
Right.
You know, because you look at it from their perspective, how does that benefit the owner? And it's really a 50-50. They're still getting paid, mm-hmm. but in a delay fashion. Now, if you educate them up front and they're not dying to pay the mortgage, because we know how owners are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how they take July's payment from yeah. 10 or 12 July to pay July's mortgage by the 15th. And so if they don't get it, they're screaming at you.
Yeah. We've gotten rid of some of those.
Yeah. So we tend to tease those out pretty quickly.
Well, we all would like yeah. to, yeah. but yeah.
We gear towards the investors. And I really, you know, I don't, we don't have a whole lot of
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about you're gearing towards the investors, and you've built a pretty neat concept where you're getting the investors from the beginning mm-hmm. and you're building
right.
and you're managing.
Well, that's on the consulting side.
Yeah.
So the consulting side kicked in. And so that kind of expanded. Aaron, doing the consultant work for that Folio users. So that was all accounting-based and accounting-based questions. And then they started asking her questions, well, how do you handle this? And it was more on the PM side or processes. And she would say, well, I can't, you know, here's generally how we handle it. But if you want answers on specifics, you need to talk to Angela. So then that's kind of how that, you know, she kind of spread some of the love my way on the consulting side. So then all of a sudden I was a consultant for PMs. And then we were approached last year by a company in our market. I mean, literally in our backyard, who said, you know, listen, we really like y'all's ideas. We love the way your company is running. We kind of have an unusual setup in that we have a brokerage that focuses on sales. We have a management piece that focuses on property management. But we also have a construction side. We have a builder side where we are providing the inventory for our investors, because there's a shortage on the management side, just like there is in the sales side. And so they said, you know, we really want someone to step in to help us corral the management back in. It's gotten a little wacky. And so we need some help with that so that we can focus on the construction side to get these units out.
Because it's not a new concept necessarily, but it's not a widely accepted or used concept. Because there's nobody really partnering with a builder or even somebody who represents a builder and say, okay, we're going to build you a duplex or a single family home or a quadplex. And from the very, very beginning, you're managing that.
Yeah.
So think about it. As soon as it's ready, you could potentially have it rented.
Well, there's benefits there.
So that's what they're doing.
The investor knows exactly what they have going into it. There's no, you know, what's the rent going to be? They don't really know. What's the management fee going to be? They don't really know.
Yeah.
So I can see a big advantage of it. Obviously, it's just one, you got to have the land.
Right.
You know, and, you know, and where you guys are in Fort Worth, it's, you have room to expand.
Well, yeah.
There's limited. It's not like you're downtown Seattle.
Yeah. So these are outlier areas. So we were looking at the map of San Antonio earlier, and there's just a ton of suburbs like around DFW at large, and lots of areas are landlocked, and that just means that people are going in and building in places that aren't landlocked. And so initially, you know, sometimes we look at those plots and we're like, oh, we didn't even know people lived out there. But it's kind of one of those you build it and they will come scenarios. It's worked out pretty well in those regards. And again, it's just that really fits into, I think, what has made us successful in the first two and a half years of Moxie, is that we absolutely, we hate cliches, but just thinking outside the box, not saying no to everything right off the bat, just because nobody else is doing it or because you haven't ever heard of anybody else doing it.
We just kind of step back and go, what would that look like?
Yeah.
How would we make that work?
Could we make that
work? Do you have an example?
So I would even say just with this consulting boom, you know, this deal with consulting for somebody in our market.
So let's talk more about that, because I understand what consulting is, of course, but dive in deep a little bit more there. What exactly are you doing for, how does it work?
Our company is handling all the operations of their management company.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And so you're calling it consulting, but it's almost like you're back officing somebody's operations.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, okay, consulting. Yeah,
so we're managing their staff, handling all their accounting.
I think my official title is the operations manager.
Okay.
So I am training their PM.
So are you pulling strings? Are you the person behind the curtain pulling the strings? And then the boots on the ground stuff is getting done by that company?
By their staff.
Okay. So you're kind of telling them what to do. Go pick up a sign, go put out a lockbox, go take pictures.
Well, it's more kind of handled.
I mean, they really, now that we've got the right staff in place. So when we first stepped in, they did not have the right staff in place. And so it was a bunch of cleaning house. It was like, this is not the industry for you. Good day. Tell your mother I said hello. And so the people that are left behind is actually a fabulous staff that's dedicated, that really like property management. They're crazy like we are. Mm-hmm. And so it's really just training them. It's getting them involved with NARPM. It's getting the property manager involved with our local association of realtors. And then just the big piece is writing down the processes. Okay, we know what the process is, but what does that look like on paper? And how is your assistant involved? And when is the assistant involved? And we just hired a field rep. So putting all those pieces together, putting it in writing so that they have some place to go to if there's ever a question.
How are you doing that?
As tasks come up.
Yeah.
Okay. We're doing the process and then getting it.
So are you using a workflow automation tool, or are you just doing some Word documents?
We have a Google Drive.
That's fine too. Yeah.
A Google Drive folder, and we do pretty much a flow chart for each process that just gives you a quick overview. And then behind that is a PDF document. They're living, breathing documents. We change them all the time.
Yeah, we hear software platforms floating around. Like there's Evernote.
We use Evernote.
There's, you know, Podio is another one that's really good. Then there's another one I'm thinking off the top of my head. It's Basecamp. Basecamp's like a workflow automation tool, but I like the Google Drive stuff. I like the simple spreadsheet stuff, the simple checklists.
Yeah.
You know, there's SharePoint. You could throw another one out there called SharePoint. It's from Microsoft. they're a hair more complicated and more sophisticated, but right. I think the Google Drive stuff, just simple spreadsheets exactly. is a really good technique.
It gets the job done. We use Evernote quite a bit between us to share. It's almost project-based, I would think, for us, for Evernote. So those are folders, you know, pending stuff, things, kind of a daydream folder. What are we thinking about? Interesting ideas that we hear, tidbits that we just, when we're together and when we have the time, what are we going to talk about? Interesting things that we've heard of. Evernote, I also find, is really helpful for communicating with our clients at Moxie. So if I go out to a property, I'll put the address at the top of an Evernote file really quick, take a few pictures, send my notes, boom, it goes to the owner, and then we can have a follow-up phone call or an email after that. Instead of trying to upload all those photos somewhere or keep them on my phone and get them into an email, it's just easier for me to do it from the field with Evernote.
So let's talk about the division of labor. Is it more along the lines of an operations and a business development side for you two? How's this working out?
Well, I handle everything back office, all of our accounting, anything that has to do with QuickBooks, the bank, all that. And then she does all the property management stuff.
Yeah, she handles all the adulting stuff. If there's anything that needs to be signed on the dotted line or something that needs insurance or any of that adult stuff that goes on with business.
Adulting stuff, that's a new term.
She does all of that for the company. And then I'm pretty much the day-to-day property manager right now, although we are looking to transition some of our workload for both of us onto assistants or virtual assistants. That's part of the growth challenge right now.
Well, you're on the right path, though, because as far as documenting everything, that's going to lead into you being able to use the virtual assistants in a lot better fashion because they need to have that workflow process. They need to kind of know what to do, when to do it. And if you're documenting that now, it's not so much here, you do it and let me know when you're done.
Yeah. Here's how it's supposed to be done.
Yes. And getting staff is getting to be fairly expensive, you know, around locally.
Expensive. And it's just, I will say the process of hiring, I'm always amazed when I walk into an office like yours and see like human beings. I wonder, where did you find people that, number one, you like, and number two, actually work?
Yeah.
And it really doesn't even have anything to do with wages. I mean, we've played around and paid people more than what, you know, anybody else in the market's paying them, and you still get people who the second there's a car problem or the second a kid gets sick, it's like they have no adulting skills whatsoever. They can't figure out how to get life done once a problem comes up. And then all of a sudden you're down a staff member for a day.
Well, we've had to kiss a lot of frogs to get to this point. Let's not be sugarcoating anything there. Because I've always joked, and you probably heard me say this before, is there's two kinds of people, two kinds of employers in the world. There's those that have bad hires and those that lie about them. So you just have to figure out which one you are. We've made bad hires. You know, it just happens. Once you, and I hate to use this term, so I'm going to like punch myself later, but the term culture comes into mind, which to me is a touchy-feely term for environment.
Exactly.
If you just provide a good environment, hopefully they like what they're doing. You pay them well enough. And we have staff members that roll in and out too, just like anybody else, but we have a good team right now and I'm hoping everybody stays, you know, but you never know. If somebody up and gets moved or now you're transitioning and all this other stuff.
Well, and also I think one of the things in, for this company that we're consulting for, you know, you hire really great people, and part of hiring really great people is that they have ambition and they have dreams to be more than the entry level position or the position that they're hired in at. And so, you know, if you get a really great property manager, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand. That really great property manager is eventually going to want to get their broker's license and possibly branch off and try and start either their own PM company or, you know, you. So it's trying to mediate that and looking ahead and going, okay, I'm going to put this time into training you and making you the very best that you are. But is my company something that you're going to want to stick around for? So that when you're ready to take the next step, it's going to be with this company.
The concept of consulting is somewhat new, but somewhat not new. And where I'm going with this is there's a lot of management companies out there, management partnerships, where they could go to their local market and say, all right, you are doing only sales. What if we come in and do your management for you? Now, there's the concept of that has always been there, but you've taken it a step further to actually allow them to manage the homes under their name. So it's ABC Realty, and they have a management division. And ABC Realty Management Division, and I'm using, you know, faux terms here, so it's not ABC Realty, but they have a management division. They go out and get business, and then you guys help manage that business inside of their organization. Is that kind of what's going on there?
Yes. I mean, they truly are their own entity. So they're running separately on their own. There's no crossover. I mean, it is truly consulting. We are paid as consultants for that company. And so we, and I think one of the big deals and why it's worked so well for us is because they're a two-member ownership. So there's two co-owners. And obviously we're a two-person team. It is really, it was almost like entering a marriage in some sense. Like we really... we needed to know everything that was going on in the company. And they were very honest and open with us in the very beginning about the troubles and the challenges that they were enduring at the moment and things that they had done prior that they felt like had gotten them to that position. And so it was very much like a, like, here we are, here it all is, here's where we're at. So are you guys interested? And it was kind of touch and go in the beginning, only in the sense that we wanted to really make sure that everybody was comfortable with what our responsibilities were and what we were willing to bring to the table.
Let's take a quick break right there.
Sure.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Mark Cunningham of Grace Property Management. Now, Mark has created some amazing products for property management companies. We have implemented his systems and his business income streams into our business here, and I can personally recommend them. If you are in the property management business, I encourage you to visit their website, as you will definitely find a product that will improve your business. I know Mark personally, and just a small investment to pick up one of his golden nuggets could earn you a return many times over. To learn more, go to propertymanagementsystem.org, again, propertymanagementsystem.org, and to get a 10% discount on all of Mark's products, use the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D. Okay, and we're back. So one of the things I want to dive into along those same lines of the consulting is if someone were to bottle that in a different market and push that out to other real estate companies that might be in need of that, kind of talk me through some of the service items you offer, how it works, because you now only, you have an ownership faction to the left, and they have the homes under their management, under their moniker, their banner, all that stuff. But you guys are coming in almost like consulting is a way to say it, but I'm thinking it's more like a partnership. Mm-hmm. Is that a better, safer term? Because you don't really have equity stake in that particular.
No.
You don't have equity stake.
Nope.
Okay. However, but you have, you know, some value in bringing that to them so you can continue to run the consulting gig. And also you manage homes on the other side.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk me through kind of that, because think of this, think if you're, I mentioned on the break, think if you're in Nashville, Tennessee, and you're like, I want to package that idea. That's awesome. I love the consulting idea. I want to package that idea along with me managing homes just like everybody else does. So kind of talk us through that.
So I think you definitely need to make sure that you have the stamina for it and that you're organized enough to do it, because essentially you're running two companies. And just when we look at the size of the companies, you know, we always, well, right now we're catching up to them, but we always kind of put them as like the cruise ship, and we were the little dinghy boat that was attached to them. So we're both sailing on the same course. It's just there's different needs on each of the ships at different times. So one is kind of a balance between the two and being very honest and open, deciding what it is that you're capable of offering somebody else. So maybe it's not full consulting. Maybe you don't have an Aaron, or maybe you're the Aaron and you don't necessarily have an Angela. So what is it that you can offer legitimately, if it's on the accounting side?
Well, a big part of what we've been doing there is cleaning up old accounting.
Okay.
Auditing everything, making it where they can reconcile, can be in balance, or, you know, could pass an audit. We're working on that. So that's something that a lot of companies don't realize they need, but they do need.
And you could take that nationwide.
Yeah.
She does.
I do.
Okay.
She
well,
does.
That's... Yeah. I want to talk about that.
For
I'm very interested.
A few people.
I'm very fascinated with that. So I'm a company in Nashville and I'm floundering and I just need some help, and I can contact Aaron and Aaron can come in and remote in and basically do a full blown audit and say, you are so jacked up here. It's not even funny.
That I can't.
And then you give them action steps.
Yes.
And then, you know, you get compensated.
I've done
that
for people in California, Chicago, all over the area, or locally too.
That's impressive. That's a very neat business model. I would say you're going to get a little bit of interest from this podcast. So I apologize up front if people are beating down your door. But,
she's the one you want to have.
We've guessed that probably AppFolio maybe have a 60% market penetration. Have you heard anything like
really
these numbers?
I don't know.
Then you have PropertyWare, and then you have a couple, you have BuildM, you have Rent Manager.
Yeah.
There's probably one or two others I'm forgetting, but it kind of dwindles from there. AppFolio has the lion's share.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of users are on AppFolio for a lot of different reasons. And to get some cleanup auditing done, to stop the leakage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That's what I would call it.
Or just even to, it's almost like a smoke test where sometimes people don't even realize, and I don't know the specifics. We really don't have time for her to be, and that's not part of the consulting relationship. Yeah. I could care less. My eyes roll back when she's like, okay, so I was looking in the escrow account. My eyes immediately go in the back of my head. But I think a lot of it is just, sometimes they just don't know enough to know.
Yeah.
You know, and so she gets
And there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to pay for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For the knowledge.
So when you find leakage and you're talking six figures, I mean, that's a pretty good chunk for them. I hope you're getting well paid for it.
I'm not cheap.
we've looked at some other companies like that too, and we've gone in and dug into their books, and we're like, you know, they're not charging this one late fee that's on their management agreement. So if they were to charge this one late fee times X number of homes, they'd make X number of thousands of dollars a year just from enforcing one rule they already have in the books. So I imagine you're looking at the management agreements, lease agreements for kind of the rules.
A lot of what I've done is just auditing what they've done up until now. Their escrow, making sure it's balanced with what they say they hold in deposits, which you'd be surprised.
I would not be surprised.
It's like basic stuff, or that we take for granted as basic stuff that a lot of people aren't doing.
Yeah, Bob Walters is famous for this from Australia. He's one of the guys in charge of leading property managers of Australia. Been doing this for 40 plus years. And he'll go in to consult with companies, and you always get the principal that comes in and says, we have 600 homes. You know, that's how many we manage. Yeah. Then you go to the software, the software says they manage 450.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you get that a lot. You know? But I can see the escrow being big, big time valuable, because if they don't have checks and balances. Yeah. So one of the ideas that we always talk about and hone in on is we have third-party bookkeeping. And that's just part-time bookkeeping. You're not talking, you know, 40 Full grand a year. Check. You're talking, you know, 15,000 a year, 1,000 a month plus. And it's checks and balances.
Exactly.
You know, you have somebody else writing the checks, somebody else doing the reconciliations outside of your organization.
That's what I've done for some people, is just do the reconciliations.
Okay.
And so that I can say, okay, on this day, they did this, but the bank says this, so we need to watch that.
Yeah, that definitely. Kind
of don't do that again.
Yeah.
Ever again.
So one of the things I'm thinking about, too, is we're developing a annual business health report. Mm-hmm. And so what I'd like to put out to our owners is that we can have a letter done from our CPA, and then we can go in and add in our figures. But essentially, like, hey, all of our taxes are current. All of our filings are current. Our 1099 procedures are right on, spot on, according to our CPA. And our escrow account is current. And we have no crazy tax things going on. And it basically give the investors an actual business health report for your company.
Yeah.
Because you've probably picked up management contracts. We have here, where the property manager, I'm using air quotes for the audience that can't see me, the property managers managing homes, they go belly up. They disappear. They get arrested. Yep. They lose their license. And then where's all the escrow money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's 40, 50, 80, 100,000 short of escrow.
Yep.
Where did it all go?
Yeah.
And that's stuff they have to maintain by most state standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting, right? Because Texas doesn't really have that state standard as far as escrow accounts is concerned. So if we go just north of here, I'm pretty sure Oklahoma has something where property managers can be audited or are audited at the time the brokerage license comes up for renewal, and they focus on the escrow account. So if the escrow account is fine, then they go away. But if there's issues with the escrow account, that can open up a larger investigation, is my understanding of it. Because I have heard in some of the NARPM circles, but more importantly, like TAR, at the property management committee level, that there's been some talk about that. You know, that's a rampant problem, I think, in the property management industry. And to me, that's a very basic thing. And if that's not in check, it's hard to believe that anything else within the company is really at par or even above par.
Yeah, there was talk a while for doing a property manager's license, which has pros and cons to it, you know.
And I don't even know about the license part, but I just think, and I would be fine. I mean, I'm broker of our company. I would be fine and completely okay with the state coming in when my broker's license is up for renewal and saying, we're going to audit your escrow account. And as long as everything there is good, that's one piece of getting your broker's license. And I really think that would bring about some grand changes within our industry, just within our state.
It would discourage a lot of sales companies from ever touching management.
I hope so.
Which could be a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, we see about 20% of the complaints stemming from property management in the Texas Real Estate Commission, which is unfortunate. Yeah, it's like 21, 22.
Really?
It's high. It's a good majority, though. I mean, anything over 20%, it's, you know, 1/5. But that's a scary thing. And it's because you have a lot of the real estate agents out there that want to be the property managers, have no systems in place.
Nope.
You know, they approve people by how they feel about them in their application process, not by hard numbers.
Yeah.
You know, you laugh, but I'm serious.
Or they just forward it to the owner.
They forward it to the owner. You make a decision.
There's everything. Yeah. You take a look at it.
Yeah, there's so many things going wrong
out
there.
You be the property manager, except pay us to be the property manager.
So good members like you guys, the members of NARPM, it's not so much that you're doing everything right. It's just everything behind you, they're doing everything so much wrong that it makes us look like we're the gold standard.
And yeah, we're not perfect.
Nor are we. But, we try to do at least things right. Yeah. And by doing that, we're leaps and bounds ahead of some of our other property managers behind us.
Yeah, we have that discussion behind the scenes sometimes where I'll come to her almost in a confession mode and I'll be like, forgive me, Erin, for this is everything that could possibly fall apart.
Yeah.
But it's because our standards for ourselves are so high. Uh-huh. And so when we bounce it off of each other, she'll be like, well, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty disappointed in you, but at the end of the day, it's really like 10 times better than what anybody else is doing.
Yeah, the other day we decided that even if we're operating at maybe 50%, that's still a few hundred percent better than a lot of people.
Yeah. And we didn't say that to ourselves to make us really feel better, but it was almost this, sometimes it's okay. We're both very much go-getters. We have a very high standard for ourselves, for each other, for the company. And sometimes it's okay to say, you know what? I didn't get it done in 48 hours, but it should have been okay from the beginning to give myself a week to get it done. Mm-hmm. It didn't need to get done in 2 days. We just felt for ourselves that it needed to get done. So it's been an interesting balance.
So a couple of things I want to dive into is I want to go back to that tangent. Mm-hmm. What would you do from the very beginning if you had to do it all over again?
For Moxie.
I almost don't know if I change it. And
I think it's really hard. It's not like a cop-out answer, but I think...
This is your opportunity. Angela could say, I want a new partner.
Yeah. I'm so done. I mean, you can totally tell because like 2 weeks ago, I moved into AppFolio a bunch of approved applicants because she was doing a project that she was trying to get wrapped up. So I moved in a bunch of people and forgot to charge them admin fees. And so I found out, realized what I'd done. And I was like, hey,
I went back and fixed it.
I moved in all those people and didn't even charge them an admin fee. And so she went back in and charged them. And then I got emails from the residents and they were like, why do I owe this admin fee now? And I'm like, because I did the accounting and I had no business doing the accounting. Going back to what would we do differently from 2 years ago, we beat ourselves up, I think, in the beginning when we started the company because we were so aggravated with how the first startup went and with that third partner. And so we were really tough on ourselves just for even thinking that we needed a third person. But as these 2 years, 2.5 years have passed, we really realized that those 2 years we really needed to kind of see where the pitfalls could possibly be.
It was like it had to happen to get us ready to start and just take off and love it.
Yeah. It was the launching pad. I think if we'd gone from her leaving the first company to start the family and me leaving right after that and going straight into Moxie, number one, I'm not sure that we would even have the same name of the company as we do now, but it definitely, I'm not so sure that it would have gone as smooth. It's been tough. It's been a lot
of hard
work.
There's
got
to be something. I'm going to make you dig here. Okay, let's talk phone systems. Let's talk computer systems. Let's talk
our phone system.
Let's talk set up with the agents. Voice. Let's talk lockboxes. Let's talk software.
I will say probably like right now, I'm looking to hire an assistant, and that's a huge piece for me. I wish that I would have let go some of the pride issues that I have with wanting to bring somebody on earlier. And so maybe that wasn't day one, but probably 6 months into it, I should have had a part-time assistant.
Great advice.
And I could have had somebody back then at 20 hours a week. Yeah, that would have impacted my bottom line. But I think in the long run, the gains that we would have made, or me personally would have made off of it, would have been paramount. So I'll say that's probably one big thing. And I do think that for both of us, I don't know if Erin will agree with this. I think we overcommit sometimes.
Definitely.
And so within the professional realms of NARPM, at the local chapter, at the state level, at the national level, Greater Fort Worth Association of Realtors, we love those organizations. But when you're a go-getter and when you can get stuff done, man, do you get a lot of knocks at the door. And it's really hard when it's somebody that you like. Within those organizations coming to you and saying, man, we really need help with this committee. And it'll only be one phone call a year or one phone call a month for the next year. It's really easy to say, okay, yeah, sure. Okay,
You do have some time commitments now with some NARPM leadership roles, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
Well, I'm on our local board.
Okay.
I'm the treasurer of the Greater Fort Worth Association.
That's fitting, for what you do. You're obviously the specialist in the accounting and the affiliate stuff. So that's fitting. I can see that. And Angela, I thought you were doing something on the state level.
Right. So Texas just has, we have a chapter in formation now at the state level, which has been something that we've talked about for many, many years, even before we were around. And so I am the secretary for the chapter in formation. I'm a past president of the local chapter, and I'm looking at some stuff, probably the property management committee at the TAR level next. I'm also involved at the Fort Worth Association of Realtors. I'm on the TREPAC committee. I'm on the board of directors. I was just voted in on the board of directors. So I'm the only property manager right now on board of directors or e-board at GFWAR. And I think I'm on the installation committee. I mean, that's the deal. I just kind of get, you know, looped into a bunch of stuff. So I'm pretty
how do you balance all that with a family and kids and everything else?
I think you just break down the norms. I mean, whatever society tells us that we're supposed to be doing as females, we really tear that apart and analyze it. And
why?
Ask why. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ask why a lot. Okay. Why is that expected of us?
Why would I be the one who you ask what's for dinner if there's another person sitting there? Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff.
Why am I the only one that can start the washing machine?
Yeah.
Why am I the only one that knows that when the washing machine turns off, those things either need to be hung up or they need to be put in the dryer, and then the button needs to be hit on the dryer. And I think a lot of that, you know, we were talking just briefly beforehand. I think a lot of discussions that are happening right now just about male versus female in the work industry tend to revolve around societal norms. Like, women have always been expected to bring home not bring home the bacon, but cook the bacon. And if you bring home the bacon, you still have to cook the bacon. So these kinds of things, for me personally, I was not necessarily raised in a family where I was told that I needed to be strong-minded, strong-willed, independent, a free thinker. Because I was a female, I was told that I needed to be those things because I was a living human being. And so I got the same messages that my brother essentially got. I mean, there were some variations of those messages, but I'd never really felt growing up that I needed to be better, stronger, more than because I was female. As we've entered the workforce, though, and kind of the property management industry, it seems to be something that comes up a lot. I mean, when we go out to conferences and we're talking to people, it's always like this, wow, the two of you.
How do you, man?
How are you girls doing this?
How do you do this with little kids?
Yeah. And so I don't know, you know, I don't know what that question is. I mean, I think we both still struggle with the balance of it. I have a 15-year-old. I look at her household, which I lovingly term a romper room. And I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine. Even though when mine was younger, I was married at the time, and my husband at the time had a very successful automotive business with multiple locations, and I ran the books for all that and did all the behind-the-scenes work, I just did it with a kid in tow all the time. And if he needed attention, then I diverted attention to him and got it back. Mine is now 15 years old. He doesn't really talk to me a whole lot. I love him dearly, but he's kind of in a different phase of his life, and so some of the struggles that I have are definitely different than what Aaron deals with.
Yeah, I have two kids at home. I primarily work from home, and even though my house is set up where I've got a separate, like, it's an add-on above the garage, it's away from the house. I can't hear what goes on down in the rest of the house. It's still, there's not really a delineation of, okay, I'm at work.
Yeah.
Go back to the babysitter.
They'll knock on the door and say, Mom, I want some toast.
Yeah, it's...
Mom, meatloaf! And you have to jump up.
Yeah.
It's
usually a big crash and a scream.
Yeah. Oh, and then you're like freaking out. Who's broken?
Yeah.
Okay, run downstairs.
Yeah. That happened recently. I was working at home because the babysitter wasn't there that day. And crash, I texted her and said, taking Gatlin to get stitches now.
Jeez.
Which is not, that's like the second time this year time that I've gotten months. That text message. Like, hey, I was working on this, but Gatlin needs stitches. And I'm Gatlin. We love that little kid. So I think, you know, just probably the wrap up message on the work-life balance is just to not feel like you're tied into any kind of norms. I don't think there's not a written rule that comes into place when you get a marriage license or when you're dating somebody, or even if you're just a single woman, no kids or with kids. We're not signing any contracts anywhere that say you are responsible for all of these things. And so even if you have a career, you are still responsible for all of these things. So just take a step back and look at it. You know, I don't enjoy doing laundry. And so,
yeah. And that's a lot of that has had to change for both of us in the past year. And I mean, her son was ready to take on responsibility of his own laundry and things like that. But at my house, I've just had to drop any standard I've had for organization or cleanliness there or keeping food in the house.
Yeah, just working through those challenges. I do want to drag something out of you guys here. So I have a Dropbox thing, and we have a file called the Good Idea Fairy. Mm-hmm. So anytime we get a good idea, we pop in there and leave it on a Word document. So what's the coolest thing you've seen or implemented in the last 6 months or a year that you'd want to share with the audience? Is you got to do this because it's so super cool. So let me start off with that, and then maybe you guys could jump in.
Okay.
I'm really liking what we're doing with Tenant Turner mm-hmm. right now, doing the unaccompanied vacant home showings tied into the code boxes.
Yep. With that, total game changer.
Yeah.
I don't see why everybody's
we're
not
with
doing
Rentley.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing the same concept. You're doing with a different vendor, and you're doing the unaccompanied vacant mm-hmm. home showings. So it may not be that new to you, mm-hmm. but for the older dogs that have been doing this for a longer time, it's mind blowing mm-hmm. because people are not having to go call an agent, mm-hmm. call a leasing agent, wait 2 days to meet mm-hmm. them at 5 o'clock. That one they want to see, you know, what really stemmed it was, I think a year ago, 6 months ago, I can't remember. One of my portfolio managers said, there's a guy that's been blowing up his email and phone that wants to see a home on the west side of town at 5:30 at night. And I don't know, that basically means you will sit in traffic for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, both ways.
Both ways.
One hour that way, an hour. It's a 3 hour commitment mm-hmm. just to show him one home versus, okay, let's get you through this self-assisted unaccompanied showing process, get you approved, get you in, let you take a look at it. Mm-hmm. Now, we've just newly implemented this. And as our meeting of yesterday, we had two applications in already just from that process, newly implemented. Mm-hmm. So I'm really liking that. And Amy Carnes is doing that up in your area. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of what I would think would be a good idea fairy mm-hmm. stuff that's materialized into something we can action on.
So you guys have any of that? Trying to approve them before they go see it?
Well, you don't have to approve them, no. No, just basically get a copy of their driver's license, name, phone number, mm-hmm. email, that type of stuff. You can ask as many questions as you need to.
Yeah.
You know, you can ask for blood type or whatever you feel is appropriate. But we tried to eliminate the roadblocks for showings, mm-hmm. you know, because in my mindset, you're not trying to necessarily screen them from stopping them from trying to do anything wrong mm-hmm. to the home.
Right.
If they want to do something wrong to the
they're
going to kick in the back door.
Yeah. Yep.
It's not going to stop them.
Exactly.
So we just want to facilitate the 99.99% of the people that are doing the right thing out there, mm-hmm. facilitate them with an easy, quick mm-hmm. showing.
Right.
And that's going to turn in more applications.
And also, don't you think, because when we implemented Rentley, and we've been with Rentley now for almost 2 years mm-hmm. for Moxie, we found that across price points of properties, because we manage price points from $500 a month to $5,000 a month. So we found, though, that by using Rentley, we're getting a better tenant, a better quality uh-huh. tenant. This is somebody who is tech savvy, which flows very nicely into our business model. So we don't have a brick and mortar office.
Mm-hmm.
We run
impressive.
Everything virtual. There's our address on all of our paperwork is a postal center in Arlington. And we've had people show up there before and they've called us and left scathing messages. You're a scam. I'm turning you into the BBB. Adios. Mm-hmm. So using things like Rentley, flows very nicely into what we do. Everything's electronic.
All our applications are
one
online.
Of our good fairy ideas, and this was from the get-go. We do not, let's just say this. If a tenant wants to send in rent as a money order or a personal check, we tack on a substantial admin fee for that.
Okay.
And it deters them.
Because with the availability of Pay Near Me.
Plus ACH.
It's no different than someone going to 7-Eleven and buying a money order when they can just hand them a barcode.
And so because of that, our tenants from day one for Moxie, we are 100% electronic payments.
Really? 100%?
So we don't have one person that mails in anything to us as far as rent. Yeah. So everything's done electronically.
And I think we're only like 91%.
No, we are 100%.
That's impressive.
We have not processed a paper fund since Moxie opened the doors. Well, I think there was like one time, but it was a really
and
good
And you pay
situation.
Owners all electronically.
Yeah. You pay everybody electronically.
Yeah, that seems to work
and
out.
And so I think a lot of management companies that we talk to are so worried about, well, how do you implement that? You send out a letter and you say, effective this date, if you choose to mail in a money order or a personal check, an admin fee of X or whatever, however you want to set it up.
Yeah, and the TIR lease even addresses it.
Yeah,
so
and the
correct,
TIR
yeah.
is all black addresses and white. It, so why would you not do it? Mm-hmm. And that's huge because it puts the responsibility back on the resident. And that's a lot of our good ideas tend to revolve around, you know, there's an idea of offering great customer service, which we want to do, but residents have got to be responsible for these leases. You're mm-hmm. signing a binding contract. It outlines all the major components of how our relationship's going to work for the duration of your tenancy. We put it down and we mean it, and you need to know that we mean it, but you also need to be responsible for that and know it.
So you have no Dropbox or anything like that?
Nope.
Yeah, we got rid of that. You know, when we moved to this new office location, we had a Dropbox at the old office where people could drop off keys and drop off checks. And of course, a month before we moved, we had checks disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, somebody was fishing and we lost a few checks. So in 4 years, we'd lost, you know, we had one incident, but
That's enough.
It is enough. And it was a big, big, giant
headache. Birdie had have a big break in where he lost just hundreds of payments.
Yeah, so we don't do a Dropbox situation any longer. They can pay via ACH. Mm-hmm. So that's a good idea for you. That's kind of come around with the NARPM community. And more residents are getting used to that. Mm-hmm. It's not such life-changing event for them. What do you mean I can't walk in and give you a money order? That's like mind-blowing. Yeah. I can't do it. More of them are more accustomed to handling that type of payment situation.
To it being that way. And even across generations, and I will say we have some older residents who are in their golden years. And in fact, we've got one that's pushing, or she's over 80. And so the first time, you know, and we acquired her. So she came into a portfolio that we purchased. She was a resident that was already there. She's going to be there for as long as she can. And so that was a little bit more coaching and encouraging. And yeah, you can do it. And just that paper that I dropped off, just take it to 7-Eleven. They'll know what you're doing. They'll know. They'll be ready to help you. And when you get done, just call me. Call me and I'll pick up the phone and I'll tell you that it's on my screen and then we're good. So sometimes with some residents, you do have to encourage them a little bit more, but it really benefits them. You're not driving all over town. You're not wasting your time, your gas, your money, your energy.
We don't have rent week.
Yeah, we don't have rent week.
The way you hear other people talk about.
Yeah. So sometimes we talk to property managers like, it's the first of the month. What do you, we can't talk right now. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. They're processing paper payments, you know, they're trying to get that done. So a lot of what we are good ideas, I think, just revolve around more responsibility and showing the residents that responsibility.
We will do anything to make our lives easier.
Yeah.
Just because it's just the two of us.
Right.
And if I'm not doing it, she's got to do it. If she's not doing it, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as many things that can be automated, and really bringing in virtual assistants has helped out a lot. They pretty much run our maintenance department right now.
Okay.
And so that's been a lifesaver. We are looking at changing a few things maybe on that end, but I think just, again, trusting that you can find somebody who will fulfill a role within your company that will take a ton of responsibility off. You still have oversight. You still need to check in and make sure that they're doing things the way that it needs to be done. But being able to turn over responsibility and letting go of some stuff and saying, I don't have to, as a property manager, I need to be up here. I don't need to be down in the weeds on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think the virtual assistant, like you mentioned, has always been around for the last 5-10 years. So this is no new conversation. But I can see it proliferate itself more into what we do on a daily basis and more of a full-time ownership basis.
Yeah.
Meaning they're not just banging out a contract in the backside where they're putting it into Dropbox and putting it in AppFolio.
Right.
Not doing the you know, that type of stuff where they're actually taking phone calls. Mm-hmm. They're working with tenants, working with owners, working with vendors. They're going to be doing more of that. And I think you're going to see more and more of that come into what we do to augment what we do. So that's been interesting. So that's been a... I think that's a trending good idea fairy that's materializing even more.
Yeah.
Any more you want to think of? Good idea fairies that the audience would just eat up. They're going to love the episode because Angela dropped some knowledge on it.
Should we do our new idea that we just got to...
Oh, now you have to say it.
Yeah.
It's a golden one.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to copy us anyway.
What I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
So we have some properties and it's usually like in that $800 to like $1,100 price range. And I will put them on market. You know, we usually have tenants. These are properties. Tenants will stay for a few years before they decide to buy a house or before they move out of state or something. So they're really solid properties. That's a great price point. I love managing stuff under that $1,100,000 mark because it always stays leased. No matter what the economy is doing, those properties always stay leased. But some of my struggle has been to price them according to market. I think I've got them on market. I know mine's a little bit better. So I bumped the price a little bit. And then we're just inundated. There's 75 showings
the first day. It's one app after another.
Yeah.
Even before it's available.
It's
sight unseen.
Blown up. You get emails from people. I'll pay you $100 more. Process my application first. And it's like, what if... I feel bad because then I'm like, I just screwed the owner out of another $100.
We told everybody this on this last house, I'm sorry, we could have easily leased out 10 of these if we had the whole block.
So I was trying to figure out like, how do I combat that? Do I just start jacking up the price every time I put it on market? How do I really go to get a good read on the current market for those types of properties? And so we were brainstorming and had thrown some ideas around. And then one night I just had this light bulb moment and I'm like, why do we not treat those properties like it's a property for sale? Because when my investors are looking for new properties and we're going, you know, they've got agents that they work with that I work very closely with, but it's this constant properties going on market today. They're taking highest and best by 5 p.m. on Tuesday. They'll get answers out to everybody by noon on Wednesday.
Highest and best.
That's
I love
a very, it. Yeah. It's a very awesome timeline, right? Because you know what you're up against. You know what the deadline is. And so on some properties, on some select properties that I feel like it's important that I'm not really, I don't have a good feel on what the market's going to bring on them, we're going to roll out highest and best scenario.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
You're going to get everybody has to get approved along the same application guidelines, mm-hmm. but we're going to take the highest bidder first.
Okay. So do you have to run the applications and charge application fees prior to giving them the highest and best offer?
So our app fees, I mean, it's stated non-refundable. Once you submit that application and you pay the app fee, it's non-refundable. You have two choices. If the property gets leased out ahead of you, you can either transfer your app to another property that we have.
Okay, fair enough.
And if it's not a highest and best property, then it just simply is what it's listed for. Or we'll keep your application on file for 12 months. And if there's something else that rolls up, we'll bring it back up. But otherwise, we don't get into that. We don't run apps all at once. We run them first come, first serve, mm-hmm. But we don't refund app fees.
Yeah, that's common. But the
highest and best deal would just be, you know, all the apps come in and if somebody bids, and we'll put it, you know, at a market price. If I think it's a $9.95 property, but if somebody comes in and says, I'll pay you $11.95, mm-hmm. we're going to run that app first. If they meet the minimum qualifying criteria, then we'll get them moved in and we just boosted the owner's bottom line.
Yeah, your owners mm-hmm. will be happy.
I think so. And it's not going to be with every property, but I think property managers across the board will tell you, you probably have a pocket of properties or maybe a particular neighborhood that's changing rapidly, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's capital improvements from the city, whether it's just the neighborhood itself.
And I would assume
and
too.
It's hard. It's hard.
I'd assume as well, you take the highest and best. Somebody could offer the $9.95 property, they could offer you $15,000, but have a 400 credit score.
Exactly.
So they still
meet our guidelines.
You might take the $1,000 offer where they have an 800 credit score.
Yeah. Yep.
Because, you know, who cares? They got an 800 credit score. They're mm-hmm. so good.
Exactly.
So I can see that being a very viable process. You know, we've seen, and you've seen it too, where you drop $25 and you get 5 applications in a weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really odd. That highest and best concept, I think we're going to see more of that, more of that because the sales market, in my opinion, is starting to slow down just a hair.
I think it's plateaued.
Okay, here's a stat for you. I'm Mr. Stat Guy mm-hmm. right now. Mortgage industry took in 36% less applications this year versus last year.
Yep.
That's a Realtor.com stat that just popped up somewhere. Mm-hmm. 36%, more than a third less mm-hmm. applications for mortgages this year than last year. That if that doesn't tell you something, uh-huh. I don't know what will. So where I'm going with this is more people are going to be renting and those highest and best scenarios are going to pop up for that everyday home mm-hmm. where people have to have a roof over their head, that mm-hmm. $1,000, you know, price point. And that's going to fluctuate in every market.
Right.
You know, that minimum base home in San Francisco could be $4,000.
Exactly.
You know, and it could be $400 in somewhere else.
Yep.
So, but in a lot of normal markets, the Midwest from left to right, you're going to see that $1,000 range be pretty consistent. Highest and best. Okay. Love that concept.
That's what we're going to do.
Well done, Angela. Well done. Well, this has been a tremendous episode. I really appreciate you guys coming down for it.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
I think we're going to have a good discussion that's going to come on record here and mm-hmm. want to appreciate or say thanks to you both. And I appreciate you both coming on.
Well, thanks for having us out.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care. Today's show has been sponsored by Virtually Incredible, providing tenant screening services, call center services, and video production services to property managers. You may also visit them at virtuallyincredible.com.
This has been a podcast episode by propertymanagementproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.